You're listening to a chapel service recorded at Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. For more information, visit asburyseminary.edu.
We make some of the musicians upset, but thanks so much. Well, I you know what? This topic is kind of a two-edged sword. You know, it's kind of like I feel like I'm here to encourage you on a Friday morning to send you home to fire somebody, you know, and I'm excited about that, you know. I mean, here's Dr. Galloway up here who's poured his life into investing in people and building them up and pouring into people. And I'm saying, let's go get rid of a couple of them, you know. And I don't know. But the truth is, it's sometimes it has to be done. And so if that's true, then we as Christian leaders need to have the courage to do it in a way that has dignity and honors the body of Christ and avoid, if possible, some of the things that the enemy can step in and use to really hurt the kingdom. So that's my heart to deliver this morning, to talk to you about something that maybe is not our most popular topic. I hope that's not the one I'm known for, you know. The Hatchet Man of Beeson. That's not really my, you know, my goal here. But it is kind of funny. I've done other talks, but this is the one I am repeatedly asked to repeat. I don't know what that means, but I'm here to serve, so there's the deal. Well, here's what I believe, that pastors don't like to fire people, which is a good thing. I mean, let's just be honest. If any of you woke up in the morning and said, I can't wait to fire somebody, I mean, you know, that's a problem. And you know, we don't like to fire people, and because of that, we don't practice it a lot, which is good, and because of that, we're really not good at it. We're not good at it because intrinsically or in essence, we as church leaders, as pastors, tend to be, well, we really are people lovers. Aren't we by nature? We're people lovers. Yes? Come on, it's okay. It's Friday morning. You are people lovers. That's good. We are people gatherers. We're people builders. And the truth of the matter is, we work so hard. It's in our DNA. We work so hard to gather people to our church. We want to keep them all. We really don't like when anybody leaves. And staff really are part of that group. But it doesn't really always work that way with staff. How many of you, how many of you have ever had to fire somebody? Wow. Any of you, were you related to that person just by chance? No? That's a very complicated. How many of you need to fire somebody and you're seated next to them? Let's see. No, okay. Just checking. Panic across the room. Take a look at the paragraph. Take a look at the paragraph. I just want to get us going again with some heart because we're going to have to. I want to deliver some heart up at the top here, because and then we'll get into mechanics. I you deserve that. That's why I'm here. I want to give you some step by step stuff. But let's kind of phrase this and letting somebody go is one of the most difficult responsibilities of a leader. Even more complicated within the context of a redemptive, caring community of believers that possesses family-like qualities. Isn't that true about the local church? It's a family-like quality. How do you fire people in your family? Well, in America, we call that a divorce. And that's messy, isn't it? It's very complicated. Nonetheless, if you have staff, this process is inevitable. The purpose, here's what I want to do. The purpose of this, if firing somebody is inevitable, as I said, I want to help us do that in the most God-honoring way possible, so far as it depends on you. I mean, I wish there was a fun way. I really do. I wish we could have a new reality TV show, you know, and and put the staff on an island and let them vote each other off. You know, the survivor staff thing. And you know, we could have the tribal council. Wouldn't that be a new... The tribal council consists of the church secretary, the church pianist, and the church administrator. And just let them vote the people right off the island. But we don't get to do it that way. That oftentimes comes down to a very lonely and unpopular decision. I've had this in my files. It's just silly. Sometimes I share it, sometimes I don't on this topic. But you see, are you guys in a good mood? You're a little bit of laughter, and this is okay, all right? Do you guys know Dave Barry? You've read out. I mean, he just cracks me up. I read his stuff, and I'm laughing out loud. I read it to my wife, and she looks at me. She says, "He's not funny." I say, "Yeah, he's funny. Listen to this. I think he's funny." He wrote a little article, Dave Barry, out of a book. You'll love the title of this book, How to Claw Your Way to the Top. Now, there's a redemptive title right there. And the chapter's titled, How to Fire People. So this is what he says. So in case you don't like what I say, I'll offer some of Dave Barry's insights for you. He said, "This is the most painful part of being a supervisor, except for the part when you slam your finger in a file drawer. So you never want to fire anybody, but sometimes you have to. You have an employee who has done something totally unacceptable, such as stealing or drinking liquor on the job without sharing it, or coming up with an idea, and you have no choice but let this person go. There's no good way to fire an employee, but there are some things you can do to make it easier. You can have compassion. You can have understanding. You can have two large security guards named Bruno standing next to you and holding hot knitting needles. You call the employee in and say, 'Ted, your performance has been unsatisfactory. So I'm afraid these two Brunos are going to have to poke your eyes out with hot knitting needles. I hate to do this, Ted, but the only alternative is to fire you.' At this point, Ted will beg you to fire him. He may well confess to the Lindbergh baby kidnapping." See, now you have something of depth and richness in case what I deliver doesn't help you at all. Just hire two guys named Ted and you'll take care of it. Here's this scriptural paraphrase, John 8:32. Here's the whole seminar in a line. "Tell your senior pastor the truth, and the truth shall set you free." A little biblical humor there, anyway. Seriously, some of you are in tough situations, and there's a passage here that it's actually quite a serious passage, but it just, if you think you have it tough, in 1 Kings, I want you to remember this passage, 1 Kings 15:9. "In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa became king of Judah, and he reigned in Jerusalem 41 years. His grandmother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. He expelled the male shrine prostitutes from the land and got rid of the idols his fathers had made. He even deposed his grandmother, Maacah, from her position as queen mother." He fired his grandmother. Sometimes context. Don't you know when we're in building campaigns and we have financial issues, we always want to know how you doing, how's your money? You know what, if you just want context, the guy fired his grandmother. How many of you have family on staff? Okay. How many of you think that's a good idea still? Yeah? All right, good. Just checking. Serious questions. The context I want to set here for us before we really get into this is that over the years, I have discovered, believed, kind of field-level research, talking with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pastors, that about 20% of you need more compassion in this arena of letting people go, and about 80% need more courage. And so for those of you who need the compassion, we'll address that a little bit later. But what I really want to address just for a moment, just from the heart, is to the majority in the room, where perhaps you have somebody back home at the church on staff, and you really already know. Let's just be honest, you really already know. You really almost don't need to hear this morning. You really already know what you're supposed to do, what you need to do, what's for the good of the church. But inside, in your gut, you don't want to do it. Now, I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands because I've just met way too many men and women in that situation over many, many years. You know the right thing, but inside there's fear, there's anxiety, there's worry. You don't want to hurt somebody. You think, oh my gosh, I'm going to cause utter chaos. And in this moment and in this hour, part of my prayer is for the Holy Spirit to give you the courage and the power to go back home and do what you know you need to do for the good of your church. I've met far too many people. I remember sitting in a restaurant in Texas with a husband and wife, the husband, the pastor, the wife, and the two of us nearly begged him to graciously, kindly, with dignity, let his music minister go. Because it needed to be done, and everybody knew it. And we talked for hours, and we said, and we agreed, and he agreed, that if he did not make that change, the church would be stuck, and it would be stuck indefinitely. And he looked us in the eye, and he said, he's been with me for all these years. I cannot and I will not fire my friend. And if it means the demise of the church, then so be it. Before we judge him, think of the passion. This is his friend, his loyal friend who'd been with the church for years. He just said, I can't do it. I won't do this to my friend who has been with me before we could barely pay him, who was with me when we were in rented facilities, who was with me before anybody cared about the church, and now that we're somebody and can attract a big fancy worship leader, and now he can't keep up and you want me to let him go. And I said, yes, I do. He said, I won't do it. It was years ago, and the church is just barely alive by a thread. Men and women, this is complicated. It really is. One of my mentors, Fred Smith, said to me one time when I was struggling, not dissimilar from my friend in Dallas. And Fred Smith sat down, and I had a student pastor, and I knew he had trouble, and I'm the eternal optimist coach. We can do it. We can turn them around. We can help. We can make this happen. Well, it wasn't going to happen. And Fred said to me, he's a brilliant, brilliant man. He's in his high 80s now, upper 80s. He said, Dan, I'll never forget this. You know, it's kind of one of those, you stop in the moment. You just remember the food. You remember the whole deal. He said, Dan, if you keep somebody on your staff that you know 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 should not be there, if you keep somebody on your staff who is not doing the job, who, in my language, not moving the ball down the field, he should not be on the team, not carrying the weight. You get the picture. He said, if you keep that person on your staff, you are guilty of embezzling God's money. That changed my life. I never looked at it the same way again. In other words, Dan, it's bigger than you, and it's not about you. It's not about you feeling bad. It's about God's kingdom and his work. So I began in those early days to take this topic more reverently. I make fun of it, and I tell silly stories because we're anxious about it. But the truth of the matter is there's power in it. One of the things I've discovered along the way, just conceptually, is that we need to learn how to distinguish and separate in this process of releasing somebody performance from benevolence. One of the things that will get you in the most trouble, one of the things that's got me in the most trouble over the years, is trying to merge. Remember, we love people, we collect people, we build people, we want to keep people, we don't want people to leave. And ultimately, many times we're people pleasers and we don't want people mad, and firing somebody who's popular and beloved is a good way to make people mad. And so we keep the two notions, the biblical notion of compassion and community, benevolence, and performance. You've got to set. So here's what you do. You take performance and you set it here. And then you take benevolence and you set it here. You with me? Got the picture? Now, stay with me. On the issue of performance, you make the decision over here. The key word is you make the decision over here. Can the person do the job? Will the person do the job? Should the person be on the team? Do they fit the chemistry? Do they fit the culture? Can they go to the next level? Can they get the job done? Yes or no? Not do you like them, not are they saved, not are they going to heaven, not is their sister on the board. No, no, no. Can they get the job done? Yes or no? The answer is no. Then you make the decision. After you've made the decision, now you come over here to benevolence and deal with matters of the heart. So, well, it's Christmas and she's pregnant and I don't know. Okay, then take care of her. Well, he's of retirement age without any funding for his retirement years. Then write him a $20,000 check. Put him on your missionary status. I mean, come over here and do whatever you feel God prompting you to do at a heart level for them as a Christian. But do not carry them on your staff so you feel better. Does that help? Does that make sense? Well, careful preparation is the best way to ensure the right decision and the appropriate process. Let's take some notes. I think if you ask them questions up front, you can really save yourself a lot of heartache down the road. Ask yourself these questions. Will the church, here's some blanks if you're filler-inner types. Will the church be hurt more by retaining than releasing the staff member? Now, these are tough questions. Will the church be hurt more by retaining than releasing the staff member? How difficult will it be to replace this person? If you could do it all over today, would you hire this person again? That's a great question. By the way, listen up. If you hesitate at all, if you hesitate for even a fraction of a moment, the answer is no. You have to have a tremendous enthusiasm so you affirm the answer as being yes. Can the staffer do the job? Will the staffer do the job? In other words, some can but won't, and some will but can't. And they've got to have both combinations, can and will. What is preventing you from releasing this person? Politics, fear, whatever it might be. Does the staff member fit on the team? You know, let me stop here for a moment. You know, 5, 10, maybe even 15 years ago, this one wasn't as high on my radar. I was really more about, are they competent? Can they get the job done? You know, I'm not really going to worry about their personality and do they fit in the culture. I have now subsequently raised that. And you know the 3 C's, competence, character, and chemistry. For me now, the chemistry thing, it is absolutely at the top of the list. What is the culture of your staff and will they fit in? They can be the best and the brightest and the most competent, but if they don't fit the chemistry, it's not going to work over the long haul. At Crossroads, we have a very casual culture. And I needed to adapt. Boy, I came from a culture, from Skyline and then into Enjoy, and I was used to slacks and sometimes a tie and a coat and all that kind of stuff, and that's just all I had known. And I came into a culture where it was extremely casual. And it was wonderful, but it was a shift. And the culture is casual. It's high energy. It's creative. It's a group of people who we don't take ourselves very seriously. We laugh a lot, but we take God real seriously. And recently, we have the wildest, quirky things going on. Recently, boy, if you were interested in Sanjaya staying on American Idol, your job was in jeopardy. I mean, we take some things seriously around our staff. Now, come on, how many of you are glad that Sanjaya is finally off? It's time, all right. We're dealing with the spiritual issues that really matter right now. Okay, now that I've just removed the glory of the Lord from this place. Forgive me, Lord. Number seven. The chemistry is very, very, very important. And number seven, would you miss this person if he or she was gone? Now, if you're thinking, miss them, we'd have a party. Now, that's a sign. And what does God say? As tough as this is and businesslike as it can feel, God really has to be part of this whole picture with you and for you. So you want to make sure you know exactly why you are releasing the person. Here are some areas that I'd like to lay out to you here. Number one, obviously, this one is, even though it's the toughest category, it's the easiest one for decision making. And that is moral or ethical issues. Affairs, stealing, theological heresy. We have a resident Lutheran on staff. We're a Wesleyan church. We have the smallest number of the Wesleyans, and we have a lot of Baptists, and we have all kinds of... We just love gathering all that. We have one Lutheran, and we love theological thing. We love torturing him. Because you know the infant baptism thing? And now he's in a Wesleyan church, and it's like, oh, this is going to be fun. So whenever we need a substitute to teach the baptism class, we make Mark teach it. His skin just comes off when he has to teach that baptism in a different way. So we have fun with these things, and yet there are some situations where you can have theology pushed so far. Even when we all understand that the big picture is about bringing people to Christ, and let's not fight about the nuances. Let's just worry about winning Jesus, winning people to Christ. There every once in a while, something like that comes up and you have to deal with it. Two, blatant and continued insubordination. Blatant or continued insubordination. Let me stay on this Lutheran track here just for a moment. I was in Iowa and sitting down, again, it's typically at a coffee shop with a pastor who is really hurting. The senior pastor sharing with me and talking about his associate. And in their system, really they have committees, and the senior pastor feels, I don't believe this is true, but they feel powerless. I don't believe they're powerless because you still have influence if you're the leader. But there are committees who do the hiring and firing. And when you're ordained in that system, you really are called of God, and the senior pastor really can't, the senior pastor doesn't hire or fire at all. And this gentleman who was on staff, the associate, literally didn't do anything. Barely showed up to work, barely really even worked. And the senior pastor was saying, in my system, Dan, what can I do? How can I affect this? How can I change? And I was trying to give him some ideas. But he was so discouraged because he had recently sat down with his associate. And his associate looked him in the eye and said, you can't fire me. He said, I'm going to do what I want. You can't fire me, and there's nothing you can do. Do you catch the weight and the gravity? I mean, some of our brothers out there are facing these things that are very, very tough. Another story, very, very recent, a young pastor in Atlanta, an associate. A pastor was gathering staff and leaders from the church and saying, you know, I'm not sure pastor, meaning the senior pastor, I'm not sure pastor really cares about the students. What do you think? Can you imagine? A staff member sort of huddling up people and saying, you know, I don't know, but he doesn't fund them well. He doesn't give a lot of time. He won't make announcements from the platform. I'm not really sure he cares about our students. What do you think? Now, Jim wasn't in one of those systems that tied his hands. And so he and I talked about 7.5 minutes. And 10 minutes later, this young man had his freedom. There are some things that need to be dealt with swiftly and quickly and without hesitation. Unsatisfactory performance. Number three, unsatisfactory performance. I think in the many, 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 many churches I've traveled to, we have this condition I call chronic niceness. Ever been to one of those churches? It's chronic niceness. I mean, no matter what the performance is, no matter what the staff person is doing, no matter how they mess up, no matter what doesn't get done, we say, oh, that's okay. And can I, since I'm the hatchet guy for Beeson, the fire guy, whatever, let me just, can I just be the mean, no, I don't want to be mean, can I just be the blunt one and say, it's not okay. This is the work of Christ. And yes, we want to be redemptive, and we want to coach, and we want to care, and we want to invest, and we want to pour. But if somebody isn't getting it done, it's not okay. Chronic niceness is not going to win the world for Christ. We got to be tough. Not mean, I'll talk about that later, but tough. Had a youth pastor, had when he came, he had 40 in the youth group, and a year later he had grown it to 29. We have to speak to those issues. Now, it's not just about numbers. But we do want clear and measurable, jot this down. You want clear and measurable evidence of progress. As a staff leader, you want clear and measurable evidence of progress. Yeah, I know it's about loving people and the power of the Holy Spirit and life change, and it can get blurry and people slob, move in their, and I know all that. But the staff is there to help make the church bigger, better, and stronger. That's not just about numbers. Let me toss some things out that I look for that are not as easy to measure, but they're just equally as important in this kind of performance area. I amongst my staff at Crossroads, I look for whether or not they bring energy into the mix. Leaders stir things up. Isn't it a delight? Isn't it a wonderful thing when somebody else brings some energy into the room? Isn't it what, because you're if you're the lead pastor or an associate or an exec or somebody, and you're carrying it, isn't it great when you hire somebody that actually shows up with some energy? Leaders mix things up. I was introducing a little kind of forum with John Maxwell and Andy Stanley and describing the difference between their two personalities to the people who are about to listen to them both. And because John Maxwell, if you know John and Andy Sanders, they're, you can't get more different in personality. But both leaders bring energy to the mix. Both leaders mix it up. And I illustrate it this way. If John Maxwell and Andy Stanley were at a swimming pool, John Maxwell will climb to the, he's my dear friend, my brother, my mentor. I love him with all my heart. John's style would be he would find the high dive, climb to the top of the high dive, jump off, screaming all the way down, and do a cannonball into the pool and make a huge splash. Major energy. Something's going to happen when John Maxwell shows up. Andy Stanley, who's that small, struggling church in Alpharetta, Georgia, you know, about 20,000 people now, and you know, he opens up campuses with 4,000 people. You know, he just, I think he blinks and he's got another campus with 3,000 people. Andy Stanley brings energy to the room in a very different way. Andy won't even be at the pool. He'll be back in the pool room in the engineer house building a wave machine with this brilliant strategic thing and these buttons, and he's back in the back and he's figuring out and he's clicking it and it'll send a wave. Shoom. And then he'll smile and he'll click it up a notch and shoo, there's a bigger wave. And pretty soon he's got tidal waves moving across. But he will move the water. But you never even hardly see Andy. So don't think the energy is about personality. It's about, are you moving people? Are you causing things to happen? Solve problems. Look for leaders to solve problems. Look for leaders to attract people. Bring energy, solve problems, attract people. This is all about performance. And again, attracting people, that's not personality per se. Let's take a Maxwell type, you know, that the Maxwell types who have the charisma to fill stadiums. I don't have the charisma to fill much of anything. And, you know, I don't know how many of you are that, you know, you can show up in a stadium and 50,000 people. Now, maybe some of you are, that's who you are, and that's wonderful. But most of us can't do that. Most of us don't have that kind of charisma. But here's what everybody in this room can have. I call it relational charisma. It's one of the best coaching tools for your staff you'll ever hear, and maybe even for you. Everybody can have relational charisma, which will attract and draw people, and you become an encourager, and people will want to be around you. That's another talk. We'll do that another time. But here's relational charisma. It goes like this, one sentence. When you walk into a room, you are more concerned about causing people to feel better about themselves than causing them to feel better about you. If you will practice that on a consistent basis, literally when you enter a room, when you walk into a room, think about your staff. Whenever they walk into a room, their sole preoccupation is how to cause the people in the room to feel better about who they are. As Christians, as moms, as dads, as leaders, to feel better about who they are. I mean sincere and in-depth, to pour your life into them in an investing, uplifting, encouraging way, rather than when you walk into a room worrying about making everybody feel good about you. You practice that over the course of your lifetime, and I promise people will want to be around you. You know, you want to be around encouragers, don't you? People who lift you up. You want staff who people want to be around because they lift them up. You don't want a staff member, do you? You don't want a staff member who, when you walk up to them, all you hear is, you know, well, I'm so tired, and I got so much work to do, and it's hot outside, and the traffic, and my back's hurting. And after a while, you know, my back's starting to hurt too. I mean, do you want to follow that? When you see those kind of people at Walmart, what do? You go hide behind some aisle, kind of. You want to wait till they pass. You can't have that on your staff. All right. They offer creative ideas. I try to ask and answer this question. Is the church bigger, better, and stronger because they're on the team? Is the church bigger, better, and stronger because they're on the team? Significant philosophical differences. Terrible teamwork. And here's a Greek word. And a stinko attitude. You can write that in, stinko attitude. You say, Dan, are you serious? Are you serious? Would you fire somebody because they have a bad attitude? Let me ask you a question. You would pay somebody for a bad attitude? I won't. I promise you, I will not. Not for 1 minute, not for 1 hour, not for a week. I will not pay somebody for a bad attitude. I will not do it. I can get that from my whole congregation for free. I don't, okay, that's not nice. But I'm serious about the attitude. Will not do it. Won't tolerate it, not for a minute. And if you allow me to continue to be as candor and candid and as blunt as I am with you this morning, I don't think you should either. But that's just my humble opinion. Now make sure the timing's right. We're going to get into all the real mechanical details here in a minute for those of you who are waiting for that stuff. But let me do one more thing here. Make sure the timing is right. The right decision at the wrong time, you know, equals disaster. Perhaps you're right in the middle of a stewardship campaign and you're at the banquet that night and you're thinking, you know what, let me just kill two birds with one stone. Let me just let everybody know we're going to let the music minister go tonight after he finishes his last song. I mean, I know you're driven. You want to get it done. You think, I've worked up a head of steam. I'm ready to do it. They're all here. Let me just tell them right now. Don't. Maybe the church has just gone through an emotional crisis. Maybe the death of a child. Especially in smaller to medium-sized environments. And it's just not the right time. Or maybe you just fired two people last week. Slow down, Rambo. I'm just getting the hang of this. Woo! I'm getting freed up. Yeah, you're going to get freed up. Let me call you home. Okay, let's get to business here, and let me talk to you about two different roads. And if you look at the notes, what we want, I want you to kind of see these at the same time, even though we're going to kind of do it in a linear fashion, one at a time. I want you to see that we're going to talk about a turnaround scenario, one scenario with turnaround, and one scenario without turnaround possibility. So we're going to start with the termination without turnaround potential. No turnaround potential. The assumptions here, let me talk about the assumptions that I'm kind of addressing or in my mind while we're dealing with the without turnaround potential. The assumptions are that you've provided training and coaching, that you've given clear written evaluations based on measurable goals, that you've personally communicated that performance is unsatisfactory. So you actually sat down and you said something. This is not a surprise. Now, perhaps you just waited too long. I've done that. Whether it's compassion or procrastination or fear, whatever it might be, maybe. Now, I'm just talking live here. This isn't an academic thing. Maybe you've just waited too long. And now, minute by every time I've ever given a talk similar to this, some of you are getting more and more anxious minute by minute because you're thinking, I need to go home right now and just do it. Just take it easy. Go to the end of the message here. But I know, right in the group this size, some of you are getting very anxious because it's becoming more and more clear what you know you need to do. Perhaps there are simply irreconcilable differences. You know, maybe the person's a great person, wonderful person, love the Lord, going to heaven, but the ability isn't there. It's just not there. And the church has passed them by, and it's tough. Not dissimilar to that music minister I spoke to you about a little bit ago in Dallas. Sometimes there's so many stories, obviously not giving you names of, but one I'm thinking of now of a church secretary, church administrative assistant who had been with the church since it was little bitty, early days, way in the beginning. And now it was time to make a change. And a wonderful, godly, wonderful saint. Years of service. But it was time to make a change. That takes courageous, godly, thought-through leadership. Could be insubordination. Bottom line, here's the bottom line. And this might help, this might kind of settle some things for you. Some of you who are don't need all the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that we're going to do here in a second. Some of you maybe are just more intuitive, gut, emotion kind of. Here's the thing for you. If you know in your gut it's not going to work, if that's the phrase you feel in your heart, in your mind, you just know. I'm giving you a technical phrase for heart people. Because this is the phrase I've heard hundreds of times from pastors. And they'll say to me, Dan, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. If that's what you hear in your mind, in your heart, in your gut, and you know it, if that's it, just do it. If you know and you're knower, that's the deal, just do it. It doesn't get better if you wait. As a matter of fact, you lose leadership if you wait. When people around you, when the board and other key leaders begin to figure out before you do that someone needs to be released, and they know it before you do, and they're ready and they're anxious to take action before you are, your leadership's being hurt. And they'll begin to distrust you, maybe not at a heart level, but in your competence as a leader. And they're wondering, some of the businessmen, businesswomen in your church are sitting back wondering, I wonder if he knows what's going on. I know I've been there. One time, board brought me in, this is way back, young, John still coached me, and it got in front of me, or got behind me, whatever how you say it. And I was in that phase where I can do it, I can turn them, we can make it happen. And I had gone like a year and a half, almost 2 years, and the board, I'll never forget the night when they took it from my hands.
and said, "We'll take care of this one, Dan." And they took care of it.
Wow.
I lost serious leadership change. Now, that's not the motivation. It's not about to save me or make me look good. That's not the point. The point was, I didn't lead. And others who were willing and ready to lead took it from my hands. Men and women, you don't want that to happen. Again, it's not about you and saving you and protecting you. It's about doing the right thing, standing up and leading. Now, in this process, two things I'm going to ask you not to do. I'm going to ask you to not operate a squeeze play or the hurdle plan. Here's a squeeze play. Don't do this. Be bigger than this. The squeeze play is where you make their job description so unreasonable, they quit. You either pull it apart down. This is really more common than you would think. You either pull their job description down to a level where this is not acceptable and they just quit, or you pile so much on the job description that you think, I'll squeeze them right on out. That way, I don't have to do it. Don't do that. And don't do the hurdle jump. You know what the hurdle jump is? It's pretty common too. Sad common. And that is, rather than just doing what you got to do, you will set up some bars. You'll set some hurdles that they've got to go over. You set these hurdles up, and you'll say to the youth pastor who has 26 in his group, "All right, dude, if you will get 126 people in your group, you can stay." Now, first of all, there's no integrity in that whatsoever. But here's the real danger. They might do it. Now, listen. If they do, now they're yours. And now, by the way, when they do that, every time I've ever seen this happen, when they do set it up, they jump the hurdle, make it happen, it lasts about 30 days. Now what are you going to do? You should have just done what you needed to do. So the guidelines to do it right: seek wise counsel from both sides, from both inside and outside your church. Never fire in a vacuum. Always seek a small number of people wise counsel. Always talk with your key leaders. Now, I want you to hear me careful on this. When you talk with your key leaders, you are seeking their blessing, not their approval. That is not an arrogant statement. That's a humble statement. If you think it through, that's a humble leader. It's your responsibility to lead. You are seeking their blessing, not their approval. What's the difference between blessing and approval? Time. In other words, here's where you submit yourself as a servant leader. If the key leaders that you report to, that you are responsible to, are not in favor of your decision, then you honor that. You don't have a choice. And you pray and you influence and you show and you demonstrate and you pray and you wait and you demonstrate and you show and you influence until those key leaders grant you blessing for your decision. But you don't back off of it. You just take time to enact it. Do it in person, but not alone, especially with opposite gender. Don't fire anybody on the phone. The worst I heard, you probably heard this, it's been written up actually now. I've seen it now in the age of blogs, things fly so fast, but someone was actually fired, I actually know the situation, on an answering machine. Just a message left, and come get your stuff, it's in a box outside the church. Speak the truth in love, but be direct. Speak the truth in love, but be direct. Resolve in your mind before the meeting. Okay, I want you to catch that. Please, please, please. Resolve this. Resolve the decision. Never, ever, 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 ever walk into a meeting to release somebody when it has not been a resolved conviction in your mind before you walk in the room. It is not a negotiation. You have to have the conviction. You're not going in to explore that. If you're going in to do this, it's done, it's resolved, it's finished, it's cleared, God's given you the green light, your leaders have blessed it, and you go in and get it done. Some of us have such sweet personalities and tender and loving and caring. One of my very, 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 very favorite stories, I can't tell you who, but pastor in a very large church, just a lover, just a great communicator, lover, pastor, lover of people. And he was determined that this one guy had to be let go, and everybody knew, and the exec pastor knew, and the pastor said, well, I'll do it. He was being brave and courageous, not making the exec pastor. He said, I'll take care of it. So he took him to lunch to let this individual go. And when they came back, not only was this person not fired, he had given this person a cell phone with unlimited usage. That didn't go well. Use the 10-second rule. Operate by the 10-second rule. Saying something like, use your words, use your heart, use your mind, but saying something like this. 10-second rule meaning, within 10 seconds, get to it and say something like this. I've thought and prayed much about you being on staff, and we're going to make a change. That will not include you on the team. Done. Period. Stop. Finish. That's it. Something using the phrase, we're going to make a change, and it does not include you on the team. Brevity is kindness. Don't drag out long explanations of how this pains you. It's not about you. Don't beat around the bush. Courage is more loving than sugarcoating the process so long and so far that it's unrecognizable. Be sensitive to the person. If anything, listen. What I just said is about all you need to say until you give them room to breathe and process and ask the first few questions. Sometimes they need to go home and process before they can come back and even have an intelligent conversation with you. Do it without malice. Honor the staff member with compassion and dignity. Don't overdo it. No revenge or anger. Don't overdo it. I've seen this again. Keep our profile in mind. We're people. And so, you know, we get this kind of three-step process of you got the lover, but the lover can get mean because they don't want to do it. And so what happens is you should just go to the middle and be firm and tough. But we start over here as this lover of people and this shepherd and this one who cares. And we got to go fire them. So we work it up and we're just trying to, okay, man, I can do it. And you just try to get this thing all worked up. And what happens is you get such an emotional head of steam worked up that you go right by firm and tough, and you go over here to mean. I've seen that happen over and over and over again. You want to learn to discipline yourself, your character, words, and actions, so that you stay in the middle with tough and firm. And don't come over here in anger and fire up and power up to justify your thoughts. Your thoughts were already right. They were already made prayerfully. They were already made with wisdom. They were already done in the right way. You don't have to be mean to deliver them. Don't expect it to be accepted with joy. You're delivering a tough thought, so just be tough as you deliver. Number 5, clearly state the reason for termination. 6, end responsibilities quickly. 2 choices, high road and low road. I've had this conversation a number of times. It's never fun. Only 2 times in all of my many, many years in this process has anybody ever looked at me in the eye and said, I choose the low road. 2 times. The high road simply looks like this. You go out mature, and we just talk it out. We just talk very, very, very candidly. You go out high road. You go out mature for the good of the church, saying the right things, behaving the right way. Put God first, put the church first, and everybody's going to win. And we're going to take great care of you. We will help you in the process. We will take care. And in other words, you communicate, we're going to set this up in a way that everybody's going to win. And then I explain it. Now here's what the low road looks like. You start talking and you start causing trouble and you try to hurt us, and you can and you will, and you'll cost the church and you'll cost the kingdom. But I'll say to them, and I'll say it kind and loving, I said, no matter how much you hurt us, no matter how much damage you do, ultimately you'll lose. You're just going to lose. And I don't want that for you. Let's do this the right way. Come on. And very rarely, they usually cut me off in the middle of that sentence. And say, you know what? No. We're going to do this right. But two times, I'm going low road. And so many people got hurt. So many people got hurt. It's totally unnecessary. Now, keep in mind, this whole scenario here is really dealing with that. This is really focused on the tougher scenario. There are many, many, many terminations and changes of the guard where it's a mutual, wonderfully orchestrated God kind of conversation at a Starbucks and it all works out great. But I don't have to talk to you about that because those are easier. I'm talking about the ones that are more difficult here. Part of the high road is a resignation. This is complicated. And I'm gonna just kind of trust your maturity here to say something that can always get me in a lot of trouble and be misunderstood. But I'm going to just risk it to help you. I'm going to risk me to help you. You have to have a statement that's agreed upon by everybody. And everybody agrees to say the same thing. Where they say something like, we sense God, we sense our ministry coming to a close. And see, people will come up to tell what really happened, what's really going on. No, you know what? We're good. Our ministry's coming. No. What's the real? No, our ministry. And you agree to this. Now, never, ever, 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 ever ask someone to say something they don't believe. You have to agree on truth. But if you really care about the person and the church, this idea of agreeing is very, very important. Settle an appropriate severance package. There's a wide range here. 2 weeks to 9 months. The shortest I've ever seen is 2 weeks. 9 months is quite generous. Probably the more common is 1 to 3 months. But I'll say this in principle rather than these details. You will never regret being generous. You'll never regret being generous. Okay, let's pull this thing in. I'm about to run out of time here. So let me quickly give you the side possible termination with turnaround potential. With turnaround potential. Now the time frame for this process is about 3 months to a maximum of 15 months. Here it is. Do everything, number one, do everything within the scope of your ability and authority to help the pastor succeed. Consider possibly a lateral move on the team. In other words, the first step in firing is passionately attempting not to fire. Drop these down. Letter A, don't abandon the struggling staff member. Now, this is the possible turnaround scenario. Don't abandon them. Don't say, you know, go do it, go make it happen. Stay with them. Coach and guide the struggling staff member. C, provide resources for the staff member. Encourage the struggling staff member. Give honest progress reports to that person. Talk to them. Stay in the game. Here's what happens. Sometimes we begin to emotionally withdraw from somebody we know is struggling. Discipline yourself through your heart to move toward them. Number two, document everything throughout the process. And when I say document, meaning write things down, the goal is not to get them. The goal is simply to be wise and help keep your thinking clear by making notes. Number three, give verbal direction by clearly stating the specific expectations of attitude and behavior. Attitude and behavior. Now, this could take three to nine months in this segment, in this section. It could take 3 to 9 months. For example, jot it down. I just wrote down a sample here. Perhaps it's a music staff person. And you would write something like this. This is doable within the time frame. Say it's 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. You would say, all right, I'm wanting to see a separate worship team for each service. I'm wanting to see 20 more people in the choir and 3 new musicians. Now, just some people always say, Dan, don't you think choirs are out? Don't you think choirs are out? No. Bad choirs are out. But I can show you some churches where choirs are rocking today. Contemporary, moving, cutting edge. So I want to see new music every month. I want to see you at all meetings on time. And I want you to resolve the conflict with the youth pastor. You two aren't getting along. You know it, and I know it. You're the senior member. I want you two to go get that. I want you to make that right. You see, the first three were behavior, and the last two were attitude. It's a very short, measurable. You want to set them up for success. Don't make them want to go, I don't know what to do. I don't know what he wants. I don't know what the... Short, clear, succinct, doable, talk it through, give them a target, help them get there. Then give written direction by clearly writing out the specific expectations of attitude and/or behavioral changes. The written is identical. There's no difference between number 4 and number 3 except you write it down. Yes?
How does those benchmarking numbers not look like a hurdle?
Very good question. The question is, how do those benchmarking numbers not look like a hurdle? You make them very reasonable. 1, reasonable numbers. And 2, you agree upon the numbers together. Mutual agreement. Excellent. Yes? Oh, yeah. That's correct. In the turnaround scenario, you are actually trying to keep the person on your team. Absolutely. Write it down. Number 4. You would be amazed at the difference between what you thought you said and what they heard. Write it down. Number 5. Make specific reference in both verbal and written direction to the specific issues where performance does not measure up. What does all that mean? You can see it, you can read it. All that means is talk. Stay in conversation. Don't make this list and say, see you in 6 months. Stay in dialogue. Don't abandon. Move toward them. Number 6, do not surprise the staff member. He asked, well, how long have you been unhappy? Oh, about 3 years. No. Stay current. If you're late in the process, you apologize. Number 7, maintain strict confidentiality. Don't discuss this outside key leadership. And when you do discuss it with key leadership, make it only in about a redemptive way. It's only about helping the individual. 8, if the desired progress is achieved, celebrate. Celebrate the turnaround. Go to dinner. Say, you did it. I'm serious. Sometimes we say, oh, you know, good for you, it's your job. You should, no. Go celebrate. They did something big. They worked hard. They turned a corner. Go out to dinner. Thank them. Say, good job. Stay in their corner and keep coaching them. Letter C, if the changes and results did not happen in your desired amount of time, say 6 months, time, whatever, then final correction and termination process begins. Phase 1, 60 days. For specified change. See, under direction, it was positive, grace-filled, one anticipating success. Correction, now we're into correction, phase 1. Correction, now moving into a disciplinary mode, but still, as we said in the back, still attempting the turnaround. But the heat's going up and it's getting more serious. Reduce that list, whatever it was you set up for them, the doable, you can do it, I'm going to coach you, I'm going to help you. Reduce that list now to 60 days achievable, something they can actually pull off and do in 60 days. I don't care if it's recruit one, but whatever it is, but make it. They give them something they can do, set them for success. Sometimes you have to find out if they even want to do it. Sometimes they just don't even want to do it. Then phase 2, 30 more days. Obviously, this is if it didn't go. 30 more days. Why 30 more days? Is that necessary? Technically, no. 60 days is enough. After all you've done, 60 days is enough. Why do I do that? Because when I lay my head down on my pillow at night, I want to know I've gone the extra mile, I've done everything I possibly can. And I'm going to give that person 30 more days, unless obviously something has occurred where they send me a signal that they just don't want to do it. Now reduce the list to 30 days achievable. Give them, say, I need, and sometimes I'm almost begging them at this point, because I'm kind of that optimistic coach. I'm saying, I need you to do this. I need you to do these 3 things that are very doable, and you and I have agreed, because if you don't do these 3 things, I'm going to let you go. And I'm that passionate about it. And when you do it that way, I promise you, it just goes so much better. I do something that sometimes some folks consider controversial. I let the spouse know at this point. Informally, it's not like a job thing. And you don't have to do this. I'm saying on tape, you don't have to do this. But I have been amazed over the years how many times this deep into the process, the person never went home and told their spouse. Their spouse didn't know. And sometimes by gently, kindly, always give them the opportunity first, and then I'll sit down with the both of them and say, I just want you to know where we are in the process. I have seen far too many times where I don't know what happens, but they go home and she explains something to him, and he kind of gets born again. I don't know, but he, and all of a sudden things turn around. Now, it doesn't always help, but listen, when I sit in a room and I have that spouse who I've cared for and I've loved and I've befriended and I've sit there and I've laid out, this is what we've done and here's how we've coached and this is what we've paid for and here's how we've helped and this is how long we've been in the process and here are the issues and here's what we asked to be done, even though she, of course, is going to side with her partner and her husband and all that kind of thing, they have a whole different perspective when the decision is made. Deep in their heart, they know it was done right. Final correction, phase 3, terminate. If the agreed upon changes have not taken place in above 90 days, you got to just do it. It's just time. I'm going to pray with you and tell you about something that many have been calling and asking for over a year, and Indra was kind enough to republish it, so I'll take 2 seconds to let you know it's back. Joshua's Men, if you've not heard about it, but I want to pray for you, and then I'll give you a shameless commercial, actually, because I think it's helpful to you. And I've got to shut this down to mind my time spot. But Father, it's a lot of information to attempt to give out. I pray, Jesus, I'm really asking here that your Holy Spirit would help translate to the heart matters that can be misunderstood. Our heart is for people, our heart's for your kingdom, our heart's for the lost, our heart's for staff. But Lord, sometimes very difficult decisions have to be made for very large kingdom issues. And it's kind of bigger than me and kind of bigger than the staff person. And Father, if we really believe in your redemptive design, if a staff member doesn't belong on this staff, really I believe you're big enough to have another place where they do belong and will flourish. So I pray for courage, I pray for compassion. I ask that you would bless the men and the women who are here, who carry responsibility for staff, and give them the wisdom and courage to do the right thing, to build their staff for your glory, for your sake, and for the kingdom's benefit. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Really quick, over the course of many years, I've led this program called Joshua's Men, one-year intensive leadership development. My heart really is not firing people. My whole deal is developing leaders. And so it was out of print for many, many years, and Enjoy was kind enough to, and people keep calling and calling, to put the whole thing, 350 pages, in a curriculum, and there's a couple of CDs, and it's all done, all simple, click, paste, do it. But it's a one-year leadership intensive process where you take a small group of men through this leadership developing experience for a year, and I just brought about 25, and their Enjoy has been kind enough, like I said, to put them out again. And so I'm just trying to let pastors know who have been calling for 3 years, wondering if it was ever going to be back out again, to tell you it's back out again. If that serves you, they're in the back. Thank you very much.